evening, ladies and germs. Welcome, welcome, welcome to our second edition of Moi, Marshall on Ion. Rhymes with McLuhan somehow. But we want to welcome you all to this wonderful little fantasia that we've put together. We hope you enjoy thoroughly, as we know you will, the pondering panderings of C.S. Lewis, of Marshall McLuhan, Marshall McLuhan, and all the fellers as they come along trying to let you know just exactly how right brains, linear thought, and literacy applies. Stand back and watch as great wonders are wrought. We provide this program for your delicious listening pleasure.
Simultaneous space is acoustic because what you hear from all directions at once, which creates a sphere whose center is everywhere and whose margin is nowhere. The peculiar character of acoustic space is simultaneously coming from all directions, creating this strange space which is spherical and musical, all directions at once, equals right hemisphere versus left hemisphere of the brain. Needless to say, the left hemisphere is entirely written tradition, and the right hemisphere is mainly acoustic. The right hemisphere is the only one that has the simultaneous power of pattern recognition. The left hemisphere, being lineal, logical, connected, has no ability to, for example, recognize a human face. A person using only the left hemisphere cannot see a face, because a face has so many components that have to be simultaneously apprehended. The IBM, old IBM saying, information overload equals pattern recognition. At the speed of light, at electric speeds, pattern recognition tends to be acoustic. Western philosophy is almost 100% left hemisphere, entirely concerned with logic, connection, and classification. But anyway, the hidden ground that Aristotle and Plato were totally unaware of was literacy. Phonetic literacy, by the way. There is no other kind of literacy that has the effects that we relate to literacy. There are many kinds of writing which are not phonetic and which have none of the effects of phonetic literacy. Phonetic literacy has the amazing power to separate the visual faculty from our other senses. It's the only alphabet that has that power to separate the visual from all the other senses, of which there are several. Some psychologists say there are about 35 senses. But the visual faculty is pulled out into high definition by phonetic literacy. Phonetic literacy has this capacity of being meaningless. The phonemes in the alphabet are meaningless. They have no semantic meanings. A, B, C, D are not phonemes, those are morphemes. When you say A, B, C, D, abacadu is phonemic. A, B, C, D is morphemic, has meaning. The ABCs, he knows his ABCs, is a meaningful statement. But the abacadu is not. When the separation of meaning from the visual came into play, it split Western man wide open. For the first time in human history, the visual part of man came alive in isolation from the rest of man. But it was really phonetically in which you were able to put into these meaningless forms the oral tradition. Homer could then be put down visually after centuries of being sung. The moment the poets became visual, Plato began to yell to get rid of the poets. He was absolutely anti the poetic establishment because it was acoustic, irrational, non-logical. But the pre-Socratics now today are back. Heraclitus and the oral tradition is now back thanks to electricity.
Good afternoon. This is the control room here in Toronto, where viewers in Canada will see our world this afternoon. It's one of 45 control rooms around the world, linking the world, or the developed world, in this first global television program. I have with me in the control room here Professor Marshall McLuhan, the so-called prophet of this electronic communications age. I hope you don't object to that word prophet. You must be tired of it.
I'm quite helpless.
I don't know if you know what's going on around here, Professor McLuhan. I don't.
It's a real humming, buzzing confusion.
Can you say what message the medium has around the world this afternoon?
Well, I can say right off, for example, that everyone will look at this program as if it was something they had already seen before, with just a little addition of this or that. Because that is the inevitable way in which we look at everything. It's the same old thing with a little item or two added. This, in fact, what is happening today around the world is what has happened at Expo. A huge mosaic has been created, which is in effect a kind of X-ray of world cultures. Not a storyline, not a perspective, not a point of view, but a kind of X-ray through this mosaic is created in which everybody can participate. Everybody is surprised at Expo at how deeply they appreciate and participate in the show. Nobody seems to realize why it is so unlike other world fairs. And I think this show this afternoon will have some unexpected repercussions in that way. People will be drawn into it as participants, whereas they're merely viewing themselves as spectators at the moment.
Doesn't this, though, while it's creating an entirely new intellectual climate, spiritual climate, for those who can communicate, doesn't it present another problem, though, of dividing those who can from those who can't?
Well, what is called, for example, a generation gap today. The TV generation of kids have a completely different set of perceptions from their parents. The parents grew up in a visual world, the world of, in effect, of movies, where they had cameras and pictures and points of view. The kids have grown up in an X-ray world. The TV camera does a perpetual job of X-ray on them, and they take this for granted. X-ray means depth. X-ray means participation in depth in whatever they're doing, and calls for a totally new kind of commitment to everything they're doing. That's why when they encounter situations in which they are merely classified entities, as in the schoolroom, they don't feel wanted, they don't feel needed, they just drop out. Now, this strange new all-at-once situation in which everybody experiences everything all at once creates this kind of X-ray mosaic of involvement and participation for which people are just not prepared. They have lived through centuries of detachment, of non-involvement. Suddenly they're involved. So it's a big surprise, and for many people, a kind of exhilaration. Wonderful.
But there are people in the world, the majority, who don't live in this new, involved society, and they're still in the age of the camel.
You think they're trying to live in the rearview mirror. They're still desperately trying to get an image of themselves in a situation that is familiar and known. Whereas in actual fact, the situation they find themselves in is not well known. It's utterly surprising and terrifying. The people have always, in all ages, Stan, have always been terrified of the present. The only people who seem to have enough gumption or nerve to look right at what's happening under their noses are artists. They're specialists in sensory life, and they just deliberately look at the present, you know, as if they dared it to ruin them or do something to them. They are like Perseus and the Gorgon. The artist looks into the mirror of art and says, the heck with the Gorgon's image, I'm not terrified. But most people simply expect, when they look at the present, to be turned to stone, as by the Gorgon's countenance. And they're terrified, therefore they prefer the rearview mirror. Nearly everybody who looks ahead, as it were, is in effect looking in the rearview mirror. And if people try to prophesy about today's show, they will be steadfastly looking in the rearview mirror.
But we are, nevertheless, as you have said, those of us who participate in this new society, this electric society, it is a new sense of awareness and involvement. But my question is this. The majority of the world's people and our satellites are going around the world today are completely out of it. The cameras don't reach them. They don't hear the message.
They're not watching the show at all.
And they are. They're not in the rearview mirror. They're in the past. Centuries.
And
isn't that gap widening as our rocket-like society goes forward?
You see, something like Expo, though, creates a mosaic of all those societies as well as all the latest ones. And everything happens at the same moment. You can be in Beirut or in Tokyo or in New York at the same moment in this kind of mosaic world of all at once-ness. And so, in effect, the backward countries have to become contemporary simply because of this instantaneous quality of the mosaic.
The medium is the massage, an inventory of effects. The medium is the massage.
Massage.
The message.
Massage.
The message.
Massage.
The message.
And the medium itself is the message. If we don't understand the medium, that is television, new media, e-media, the internet, painting, whatever it is, then we won't understand what the message is. And the medium itself influences society.
New technologies generate vast new environments against which the individual organism is quite helpless.
Of Iowa Army National Guard Sergeant Daniel Sesker, he's hurting America.
I feel good about warning this nation that the wrath of God is...
Come on this show. He will come on your show. Let me suggest why he wants to.
Well, we have
show.
Civilized discourse.
Well, here...
Your job is...
Good morning. Good
morning.
Good morning.
Your education...
To the students of America, that help is on the way. The help is on its way.
Family. Your neighborhood.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Government.
After 9/11, AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South began providing the super secret NSA.
Room to tomb surveillance.
With information on phone calls of millions of our citizens, all part of the war on terror. President Bush says.
Saying that the medium is more important than the message it carries?
On the other hand, the glorious moment was the rebellion of the rebellion of
joy in the revolution.
The medium against the bloody message.
It's obvious. The medium is the message.
Could you repeat for a moment your evaluation of the Nixon-Kennedy debates, because it seemed to say a lot about the media.
So it is, as we bubble along. Join in. Here we go. having fun yet? Because always remember that mares eat oats and does eat oats and little bears eat ivy. You'd eat ivy too, wouldn't you? It's very interesting as things kind of ramble and roll along here as we start to see the sentinel guarding the global village and how the global village is laid out in the introspect that individual humans embrace from the relegated position that the message, the medium, lays out that, quote, is. It's very interesting and quite an interesting dynamic if you really think about the difference between the global village and the medium that is indeed the message. So the question now comes at bay, is the message affecting the medium to what end or to what regard? It's a very delicious concept once you play with it just a little bit. This moi is pretty dynamic because it brings you into the, maybe sometimes for the very first time, the ability and capacity to actually consider what Marshall was trying to interlay into the full capacity that you're discussing here. Very, very wonderful indeed.
Should I announce myself, Ion, so you won't get paranoid?
Oh, no, darling, we know it's y'all.
I was just lurking so I could hear what you're doing.
We know, it's all right. That's why we didn't lock it, darling. It's better than snuff and not half as dusty.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. We rolled along a bit, and we're just having a little interlude.
Mm-hmm.
Allowing us to play just a little bit.
Okay.
So they kept it open so you could come in, Carol?
Yeah.
So she might monitor you, Ian. Just ignore her.
No,
so
it's all well. It's all well. It's all great.
This will be part of the recording.
Oh.
Of course. Of course.
Keeping
welcome
an eye
all.
On our Ion.
Yeah.
Ours?
Of course.
Keeping an eye on our Ion.
Ours? Oh.
Okay, I better go. I'm interrupting. Thank
no,
you, Ion.
No. It's good tidings of great joy. We could ask Bob about what we've had so far, but
no,
then he
I
would
don't
know,
want to know
already.
Bob's
goodbye.
Going to the beach.
Oh,
bye.
Bye.
Yeah, don't. While you're there, don't think about the global village, Bob.
While you're there, Bob, don't think about the global village.
Of course.
Aloha. Bye, Ion.
Maloha. Well, that was our Dr. Carolyn Dean and Bob on his way to the beach checking in on us as we go. So very, very, very wonderful, as it should be. Great fun. Very interesting the way Marshall would include or preclude many, many, many proclivities that would be allowed. It's relatively dynamic as we play here. It's great, great, great fun. And so it is. Hip, hip, hooray for Hollywood. All right, hang on. Here we go.
I'd like this baseball team.
Oh, you would?
I would like to know some of the guys' names on the team, so if I want to play with them, I know them, and I meet them on the street or in the home here, I can say hello to them.
Oh, sure. But you know they give baseball players nowadays very peculiar names.
I know, a lot of funny names.
You know, like Sticky Fields.
Sticky Fields.
Goofy Dan.
Booby Bobber.
Booby Bobber.
I know all of them.
Well, let's see. Now, we have on our team, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
That's what I want to find out, the guy's name. That's what I want to find out, the guy's name.
Now, tell me, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
Now, Abby, you want to be the manager of the baseball team?
Yes.
You know the guy's name?
Well, I should.
Well, you tell me the guy's name on the baseball team.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
You ain't saying nothing to me yet. Go ahead and tell me.
I'm telling you.
You ain't said nothing yet. Go ahead and tell me.
Who's on first, what's on second, I don't know is on third.
You know the guy's name on the baseball team?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
Why are you asking me? I don't know.
Wait a minute.
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's your name.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it. That's his name.
Well, you ain't said nothing. I ain't asking, have you?
You did.
You know the guy's name on first base?
Sure.
Tell me the guy's name on first base.
Who? Who is on first, Lou?
What are you asking me for?
Now, don't get excited. I'm saying
I'm asking you a simple question. Who's on first?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who? Yes. I'm asking you, what's the guy's name on first base?
Oh, no. What's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Don't mix up my...
I'm not mixing up anybody. Now, what's the guy's name on first base?
Now, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on first. We're not... You mentioned his name.
I mentioned his name.
Yes.
I don't know anybody's name on the team. How could I mention a guy's name?
You did. You just mentioned it.
All right. What's the guy's name on third base?
No, what's on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on first.
I didn't even mention a guy's name on third base.
Yes, you did.
All right, then. Who's playing third base?
No, who's on first?
I'm not asking you what's on first.
What's on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know. He's third base. Third base. I don't know anybody on the baseball team.
You do. You mention their names.
I do?
Sure.
You got an outfield?
Well, naturally.
Tell that fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask you.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Well, go ahead. Tell me.
Tell you what?
Tell that fielder's name.
Why?
Because I want to know. Because.
Oh, he's center field. You know these players as well.
Who's
as
in center field?
No, who's on first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know. Third base.
Look, Louis, you don't seem to understand. See, I have a first baseman.
I know you got a first.
Yes,
I asked you, what's the first baseman's name?
No, what's the second baseman?
I'm going to stop asking you, sir. I asked you, what's the first baseman's name?
What's the second baseman?
I don't even get past the first. All right, who's on second?
Who's on first?
What base do you want to talk about?
You can talk about anyone you want to talk about.
All right, now who's on first?
Right.
Okay. You got a first baseman.
Yes.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar. Every dollar.
Who gets it?
He does. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. Why not, Lou? He's earned it.
Who did?
Yes.
Look, when you pay off the first baseman every month, you get a receipt from the guy?
Sure.
How does he sign his name?
Who?
The guy you get the money to.
Who?
The guy you get the money to.
Well, that's how he signed it.
That's how who signed it?
Yes.
Who I come?
That's it.
Who? Look, you go to first base.
Yes.
And you say to him, here's your money, sign the receipt. How does he sign his name?
Who?
The guy you give the money to.
That's how he signed it.
That's how who signed it?
Yes.
Sure. You gotta get a receipt from the guy, don't you?
Guess what, Lou?
How does the guy on first base sign his name?
Who?
The guy on first. I'm asking you. When you give the guy the money, what's the guy's name that you give the money to?
Now, wait a minute. What signs his own?
Who signs his own?
No, who signs his?
I mean, what's the guy's name on first you give
the money? What is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. The field is in. The center field. I don't know. You got a pitcher on the team?
Well, this will be a fine team without a pitcher.
It's a fine team. What's the pitcher's name?
Come on.
I can't
change that name.
You don't want to tell me the date?
I'm telling you.
Go ahead. Tell me the pitcher's name.
Tomorrow.
Why not tell me today? I
am telling you.
Tomorrow. Then tell me the pitcher's name.
Tomorrow.
All right. What time tomorrow you tell me the pitcher's name?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you going to tell me? Who's pitching?
Who is not pitching?
I'll break you right now. I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know. Third base. You got a catcher?
Certainly you've got a catcher on a baseball team.
Catcher's name?
Today.
Today. Tomorrow's pitching, today's catcher.
Now you've got it.
Now I got it. All I got, we got a couple of days on a team. That's
I
all.
I can't help that, Lou. I don't
know. I'm a pretty good catcher myself.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah, now I get behind the plate and I'm going to do some fancy catching, and tomorrow's pitching on my team, right?
Yes.
Now tomorrow he winds up the ball and I'm behind the plate and a heavy hitter gets up.
Yeah.
Now the heavy hitter gets up and he's ready to hit the ball and tomorrow's going to throw the ball and I'm the catcher. Now I'm going to try, tomorrow throws the ball, the guy bunts the ball. Now when he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I'm going to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to home.
Now that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Naturally.
That's.
Now you're
passing. I pick up the ball, so I throw it to
natural. You don't.
I throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's what I'm saying. I said I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
You ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally. Same as you.
Say it.
I throw the ball to natural.
You don't. You throw it to who?
Now, who's got it? Naturally. That's what I said. Whoever it is better get it.
He'll get it. Don't worry about who. Who'll get it?
Yes. He better get it.
All right.
Now, I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is stops the ball so the guy runs a second. Who picks up the ball and throws to what? What throws to, I don't know. I don't know. Throws back to Tamar. Triple play.
Could be.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn. I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
There's your little example of interplay with Bob and Ion. It's too much fun, too cool for school. Now another classic in the Global Village. Hang on, folks. Here's Johnny.
Hiya, pal. You call me pal? Why, I haven't heard that word for years. You know, bub, I was once a tramp like you.
Oh, congratulations.
Ah, but it wasn't always thus. I can look back to the days of yore when I was a very happy married man. And one day that rat came and destroyed forever all the happiness I'd ever known. I'll never forget that day. I just came home from the graveyard shift, and there was a note on a pillow.
What did it say?
Oh, it was one of those cold-blooded notes. Dear Mo, I'm running away with Larry. I was obsessed with the idea that I must find him. The trail led me to Pittsburgh. I found that I'd missed him by 3 days when I got there, and I swore right there in Pittsburgh I'd find him and have my revenge. Now, on went the chase. Miami, Dallas, New Orleans. And then I came face to face with a rat that had ruined my life. It was in Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls! Slowly I turned, and step by step, inch by inch, I walked up to him and I smashed him. I smashed him faces and I knocked him down.
Oh, take it easy, bud. Take it easy.
Excuse me, kid. It's that word Niagara Falls. Every time I hear it, it tears me apart.
Don't do me any good either. Ungrateful, that's what it is. How do you like a guy like that? I say hello, pal, sort of friendly, and just because I say Niagara Falls...
Niagara Falls! Slowly I turn.
Please, no.
And step by step. Inch by inch.
No, please, no.
I step by step. I'll kill her and him.
Blood?
Yeah, yeah! Rivers of blood! Pools of blood! The blood!
Pardon me, pal.
Did you call me pal?
No.
It's been a long time.
time since I heard the word pal.
You too? Haven't you got any friends either?
That's what I was coming to, the dirty rat. He tried to take her away from me. Ah, but he couldn't get away with it, so he trailed me.
To Pittsburgh?
Yes. And then you went to Miami, New Orleans, and Dallas?
Yes, yes.
Well, how did you know?
You'd be surprised. Then he caught you in Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls! Slowly I turned.
Please.
Step by step.
Not that, no.
Inch by inch. I picked him up. And then I knocked him down. What have I done? Blood. The judge. Blood! You! Ah, there you are, Larry.
Why, you?
Hi, pal.
I almost caught up with you in Pittsburgh.
Go ahead. Tell him where you found him.
Forget it. It's past history.
Why, you cowards? You're afraid to say Niagara Falls.
Niagara Falls!
By new media and new technologies tends very much to fall into the category of referred pain, such as skin trouble caused by the appendix or the heart. As with all new technologies, pain creates a special form of space, just as they also create pain. It's very much a case again of Heinrich Hertz's law: the consequences of the images will be the images of the consequences. All new technologies bring on the cultural blues, just as the old ones evoke phantom pain after they have disappeared. The extreme provinciality of our ideas of seeing is a simple result of living in a visual environment. Man-made environments are always unperceived by men during the period of their innovation. When they have been superseded by other environments, they tend to become visible. We now see the visual world very plainly and begin to realize that other cultures, native and oriental, have been developed on quite different sensory plans. For not only is each sense a unique world, but it offers unique pleasures and pains. The extreme and pervasive tactility of the new electric environment results from a mesh of pervasive energy that penetrates our nervous system incessantly. The sense of touch had been anesthetized in the mechanical age, but today television is only one of the tactile agents transforming popular awareness. Of course, color TV is very much more tactile than black and white TV. Tactility is the integral sense, the one that brings all the others into relation. This sense is greatly enhanced by the polarized and feedback pattern of our new electric environment. This environment itself constitutes an inner trip, collectively, without benefit of drugs. The impulse to use hallucinogens is a kind of empathy with the electric environment, but it is also a way of repudiating the old mechanical world. When one has been hurt by new technology, when the private person or the corporate body finds its entire identity endangered by physical or psychic change, it lashes back in a fury of self-defense. When our identity is in danger, we feel certain that we have a mandate for war. The old image must be recovered at any cost. But as in the case of referred pain, the symptom against which we lash out may quite likely be caused by something about which we know nothing. These hidden factors are the invisible environments created by technological innovation. The old men from Iron Mountain have not a clue to the origins or persistence of war as a quest for that identity that is always threatened by technological innovations. They are quite aware of the vast research and development activities that are accelerated by war, but it has never occurred to them that the innovations resulting from this research and development are precisely the ones that obliterate the identity image, indispensable to peace and tranquility among nations. For example, the atom bomb, the fine flower of the scientific effort spurred by the Second War, has hastened the arrival of software and automation that are swiftly undermining the entire industrial establishment so long devoted to hardware. Electric software abolishes the division between industrial worker and savant as much as between civilian and soldier. War is a principal motivational force for the development of science at every level, from the abstractly conceptual to the narrowly technological. Modern society places a high value on pure science, but it is historically inescapable that all the significant discoveries that have been made about the natural world have been inspired by the real or imaginary military necessities of their epochs. The consequences of the discoveries have indeed gone far afield, but war has always provided the basic incentive. What is called progress and advanced thinking is nearly always of this rearview mirror variety. Desmond Morris put it very well in The Naked Ape. Instead of saying that our space program is Newtonian and obsolete in its very beginnings, he says the space ape still carries a picture of his wife and children with him in his wallet as he speeds towards the moon. All the money that is being spent in NASA is exactly on par with the budget for Bonanza. It is a Newtonian program, not a 20th century program. It is a misappropriation of funds. It has no relevance to our time any more than Bonanza does. Projecting missiles into outer space is no different from the activities of Columbus and Magellan. Violence in its many forms, as an involuntary quest for identity, has in our time come to reveal the meaning of war in entirely new guise. This is a dimension of war totally invisible to the old men from Iron Mountain. War is a sizable component in the educational industry, being itself a form of education. The United States is by far the most visually organized country in the history of the world. It was the only country that was ever founded on the basis of phonetic literacy for all. All of its political and business institutions assume the ground plan of this literacy. All of its production and consumption techniques are expressions of the same literacy, labels and classifications for everything and everybody. Clothing is an extension of the human skin, is as much a technology as the wheel or the compass. Strangely, the world of fashion has never been approached from this point of view. Is it merely a Boer war? Is it merely an attempt to add a bit of spice and variety to the monotony of life? Possibly the fact that there is no such thing as fashion in native societies may provide an approach to this question. In these societies, clothing indicates age and status and serves complex ritual functions that relate the energies of the tribe to cosmic forces as much as we relate our energies to tanks and airplanes. Clothing is power and the organization of human energy, both private and corporate. In tribal societies, they prize the integral power of the corporate far above the variations of the individual costume. In fact, when all members of the tribe wear the same costumes, they find the same psychic security that we do living in uniform, mechanized environments. Since our environments are so drastically uniform, we feel we can afford a wide play of private expression and behavior in costume. However, when we seek to rally the corporate energies for sharply defined objectives, we do not hesitate to impose uniforms. Games stand in relation to new technology, somewhat in the form of clothing. Radio and baseball were well matched, but television has killed baseball and advanced football and ice hockey. Baseball was quite incompatible with the television spectator's role of participation in tactile depth. Baseball insists on careful timing and one play at a time. English cricket would be equally futile on television since its plays are much less frequent. One of the peculiarities of an electric technology is that it speeds up this process of transformation. Instant and total rehearsal of all paths and all processes enables us to perceive the function of such perpetual returns as one of purgation and purification, translating the entire world into a work of art.
Possibilities of evasion, of consequences, of destruction.
I know that someone that practices yoga samadhi, you plug electrodes in his head, and when he says, I am reaching right now this state, you can see the encephalogram going wild. And that's evidence that these guys are changing their brains with techniques. And that is one of the techniques or one of the skills needed to progressively differentiate yourself. How do you change it? Our brain is a computer that comes with our mind. We don't know how many computing modes it has. Yoga practitioners are able to reprogram that computer in several different ways to have several different experiences. How many other ways are there to reprogram the computer? That is the real way.
You have seen mannequins. I have. You do not fear them. But sometimes you wish for it. Is this not so?
Yes, I also. It happens to men who have seen what we have seen. And then, I come to this place of my ancestors. And I remember. Like these persons, we are all dying. To know life in every breath, every cup of tea, every life we take, the way of the warrior, life in every breath. That is Bushido. Aye.
Electric media retrieves the old dark age of goddesses and monsters.
Our ancestors lived in a mythic world, but because they had none of the literate means of classification, a myth is a speeded up following of a process. We live mythically ourselves so that we understand their myths now for the first time. You should know what the stakes are. The stakes are our civilization versus tribalism. And it's a considerable revolution to have been through 2,500 years of phonetic literacy only to encounter the end of that road.
Substance D come from? Why can't we stop it? The bigger this war gets, the more freedoms we lose, the more Substance D is on our streets. Can't you figure this out?
Look around you. Look how far we've come. Humanity wasn't meant to live like this. Our every waking moment, trapped in crates and scared. It's time to stop submitting to this tyranny. It's time to realize that we're being enslaved. Uh-oh, it's our tax dollars at work. Protect us from ourselves.
media guru, but you're aware of the fact that you're being asked to give sound bites and God knows what else. And how do you get out of it if the media is in fact what you're talking about?
It's one of the most painful parts of understanding McLuhan is when you read his letters beginning in the early 70s and he realizes his message has not gotten through. Nobody's really listening.
What do you think is the most I want to use the word effective, but that's not the right word. I'm talking about television here. What has the greatest impact on audience? Is a TV program? Is television best when it covers an event like a space shot or the Olympics or a baseball game? Is it best when it tries to entertain with movies at night? When it tries to inform with news programs?
I'm sure that McLuhan was not satisfied that he'd been understood towards the end of his life. My own feeling is that he felt that people had not bothered to understand.
The chief charge against McLuhan was simply to say he's a technological determinist. What he says is the machine makes the rules. McLuhan's enduring phrase is nothing is inevitable provided we're prepared to pay attention. And he never gave up to the end of his life.
Extensions of some human faculty, mental or physical. The wheel is an extension of the foot. The book is an extension of the eye. Clothing is an extension of the skin. Electric circuitry is an extension of the central nervous system. The extension of any one sense displaces the other senses and alters the way we think, the way we see the world and ourselves. When these changes are made, men change.
Literate culture is visual and detached. It creates the civilized man, the detribalized man, the man who is not involved. And the effect of the electric revolution is to create once more an involvement that is total. Why should art and culture suddenly become very big business, like big science? The reasons are tied up with the fact that that we're living in an information age. When you live in an information age, culture becomes big business, education becomes big business, and the cultural explosion or the information explosion becomes itself culture. It knocks down all the walls between culture and business.
Curtis is the only person who picks his antennae, pick up these messages before anybody. And so he is always thought of as being way ahead of his time because he lives in the present. There are very many reasons why most people prefer to live in the age just behind them. Safer. To live right on the shooting line, right on the frontier of change and so on, is terrifying.
don't think I care to do this.
Ah, come on now. You got the dang swag. Ain't nobody watching.
Geronimo!
But we should jump. He did.
All right, then. I hate not to conform.
Insensitive Indian blood!
I ain't equipped to think for myself.
Me neither.
Daddy, I'm still hungry.
You're rusty. I think there's maybe some mint dust in here.
Oh, only God Almighty himself will provide for my boy. God will provide anything you find. All you got to do is live off the land. If it's food that you're craving, look at all that amber waving. It's all grain a growing boy can stand.
But that is in a weed.
The man's been waiting on me.
I ain't too fond of working with my hands.
So what do we do now?
Trap granny through the plow. And your days are brown with the sweat of a wrinkly brow. Callahan! You want a fish fry, then the fish they gotta die. Like a Sunday.
Split implies bananas, and I don't see any of those.
And this thing cold and smells fine. That's more dessert for me. This salad ain't salad unless you got your salad. Nature's own, all you can eat buffet.
This here's a salad bar station.
That's a suggested donation. But I'll be down if I'm a grown up pie.
Are we still in the field?
That I shouldn't, but I love banana pudding and mac and cheese. That's all your damn name. Tomatoes and taters. Just don't look at the waiter. Make a run for the door on three. Hey! Go, go, go!
There is hair in this thousand island. Can I get comps on this or what?
Nature gave us dairy for all our culinary. We got all the food that we need.
Hey, I ain't getting none.
Try the warmer cow.
I'm touching a cow thing.
It's a free made of free. Manifest as to me. This land was made for you and me.
Daddy, this ain't our life.
Privacy was almost unknown, even in Shakespeare's day. It came in after that period, in the 17th, 18th centuries, and it was dependent upon an architecture that sealed off spaces. People didn't live in private spaces in earlier periods. And it was with the coming of the book and the need for areas in private areas in which to read and study and so on that privacy gradually caught on as a value. I don't think privacy has quite the same meaning in our time that it used to have. I know, for example, a big business in Toronto where all the private offices have been dissolved, all the walls have been pulled out so that the participants in this business can sit together around tables in the middle of the big office space so that they can watch each other's responses to stocks, world events, and so on. They want a perpetual dialogue going on among themselves as a response to world events. And I think this is part of the artist's world. The artist, when he encounters the present, the contemporary artist, is always seeking new patterns, new pattern recognition, which is his task, for heaven's sake. His great need, the absolute indispensability of the artist, is that he alone, in the encounter with the present, can give the pattern recognition. He alone has the sensory awareness necessary to tell us what our world is made of. He's more important than the scientist. The scientists are going to wake up to this shortly and will be resorting en masse to the artist's studio in order to discover the forms and the materials they're dealing with.
Into a jet, and we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half, and we get out. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. It may be confounding. It may finally be destructive of what is best in the human spirit.
If you push that all the way, you'll see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
But I disagree with you there. You see, now we finally come to a point where we do disagree. I say that we will inhabit all these areas, and we may inhabit them in depth, but we will not inhabit them well. You know, the great distance between McLuhan and myself I see now, really, is that all the while he's talking about man and man's relation to these new environments, I would keep saying, yes, everything he says is true if he would just add this one word, alienated man, in relation to his new environments, which alienate him further from himself.
Let
me go on with this now. This is really where I've been trying to get to all night, and it is daytime. The thing is that what does it mean to be an alienated man? It means to be a man who does not have a clear notion of himself, but rather contains two opposed notions of himself. For instance, if I'm an alienated man, I think that I am smart and I think that I am dumb. I think that I am good and I think that I am evil. I think that I am strong and I think that I am weak. I think that I am a tough guy and I think I'm a coward. I think I'm a great lover. I think I'm inept.
Mm-hmm.
The nature of the alienated man is that he always contains opposed notions of himself at the same time. So therefore, the only actions which can define his nature are precisely not field actions, not actions in relation to an environment which is controlled from without. He cannot define himself in any environment which has been programmed for him. He can only define himself by getting into situations which are brand new for him. Because when he's in a situation which is brand new for him, his obsessions can cease for a moment. He can stop thinking of himself for that one moment as being either this or that, because he can only be one thing at the moment. In other words, if a man is jumping off a burning building into a fireman's net, that is a profoundly existential situation because he doesn't know how it's going to turn out.
Why don't you tend to consider value judgments as a profound way of alienation? The man who makes value judgments usually manifests deep alienation from almost everything.
Oh, yes. Why shouldn't I? Any reason why not?
Have you ever taken LSD?
No. I've thought about it. I've talked with many people who have taken it. And I have read Finnegan's Wake aloud at a time when takers of LSD said that is just like LSD. So I've begun to feel that LSD may just be the lazy man's form of Finnegan's Wake.
You said that bad news was indispensable to newspapers. Is the same thing true for television?
Well, it's like saying if TV is a cool medium, then you can't use it for hot jobs. Like the Vietnam War is a hot war, and it won't go on TV. It's the first hot shooting war ever shown on a cool medium. The cool medium involves the whole audience so deeply they find war unbearable. Show the same war on movie, on press photography and so on, people won't feel too badly about it. But on TV, they really feel it. They're involved for the first time. And so LBJ is making a great big mistake in trying to have a hot war on a cool medium.
What should Canada do to be taken more seriously in the world?
When you say what should Canada do to be taken more seriously, I think we're very lucky to be a backward country. At a time like this, the less involved, the less hot, the less you are in the midst of the big events, surely the better off you are. No, I think it's a great asset. Also, when you are out of the main swim, as it were, you have a much better opportunity of seeing what's going on. Canadians have a tremendous opportunity to observe what's really happening in the world. I think Canada has the opportunity of taking the entire world as show business, rather than as a serious and dreadful happening. You know, why not? Why shouldn't Canadians accept the world as a happening and as show business?
What do you think Marshall McLuhan ought to do if he wants to be taken more seriously in the world today?
Marshall McLuhan is taken far too seriously.
Well,
I certainly wouldn't do anything to increase that.
Marshal McLuhan, you say TV has turned the world into a global village. Am I right? Will it turn us all into global village idiots?
Again, not, there are worse fates. An idiot means a very private person. That's a Greek word, meaning a very private person. I'm losing my idiot status steadily. I'm becoming less and less private. I'd much rather be an idiot. The book, in this picture, the assumption was made that the book was the source and cause of all idiotism, all individuality, and that the new media will turn us all into collective automata robots. This is a rather simple-minded idea. I mean, Truffaut and Bradbury together had cooked up something that's not very convincing. It's certainly true that the book has had an enormous amount to do with creating individuality. And the more people become individuals, the more they become competitive, and the more they compete, the more they become alike. It's true that competition has, and repeatability has tended to create a great sameness. And you can see that cool media don't always have that effect. There may be more individuality coming out of cool media.
You've been quoted as saying that you don't necessarily agree with everything that you say.
I have no point of view, as for example now. See, I couldn't possibly have a point of view. I'm just moving around and picking up information from many directions. No, a point of view means a static fixed position, and you can't have a static fixed position in the electric age. It's impossible to have a point of view in the electric age and have any meaning at all. You've got to be everywhere at once, whether you like it or not. You have to be participating in everything going on at the same time, and that is not a point of view.
Would it really matter if someone burned all the books in the world?
Well, I should think so. It would make quite a difference. But the possibility of recreating libraries has now become fantastically real. For example, all the books in the world can be put on a single desktop, 20 million. 20 million books can now be put open every page on single desktop by microfilm. The sort of things that are happening make that Truffaut picture look rather obsolete. They still think of books as made as bound paper objects, but in the new microfilm age, microcard age and so on, the book is taking on a totally new meaning. In the age of Xerox, the book takes on a totally new meaning. It becomes an information service. It ceases to be a package. The book is no longer a package. It's information service.
Why do you say Canada is a backward country?
I'm using that term whimsically, meaning we are born in the 19th century, we're of 19th century origin, and we stayed there. People like the Americans, who've decided to try it out in the 20th century, have done such a bad job, we don't feel any temptation to follow them. But notice, for example, in British Columbia, they never had a 19th century. But this is also true in California. They leapfrogged out of the 18th century into the 20th, and this has great advantages. Canada, by simply hanging on to the 19th century, may be able to leapfrog out of the 20th century into the 21st century without ever having bothered with the 20th. And this, I think, might be a huge advantage. If we can only hold...
The people in those disciplines thought he was playing fast and loose because he had no credentials in any of those areas.
Any specialist is going to see to it that his specialty is protected against any invasion from any quarter. They've got a very good thing. They've taken a long time to acquire this specialist skill, and they don't see why they should yield one inch to people with different methods.
Well, McLuhan started to make an impact with the Gutenberg Galaxy, which was 1962. And then Understanding Media came along a couple of years later, and that led to what they subsequently called the McLuhan Explosion.
The forms of entertainment that work best on television are ones which admit of a great deal of casualness, in which people can be introduced and dialogued with in the presence of the camera at all sorts of levels of their lives. You capture them at all sorts of strange and offbeat moments of their existence.
Instead of going out and buying a package book, of which there have been 5,000 copies printed, you will go to the telephone, describe your interests, your needs, your problems, and they at once Xerox, with the help of computers from the libraries of the world, all the latest material just for you personally, not as something to be put out on the bookshelf. They send you the package as a direct personal service. This is where we're heading under electronic information conditions.
And then, of course, then there's a whole other thing that happened in the business world.
Thompson House. From here, Roy Thompson operates radio and television stations, magazines, newspapers, and book companies in 20 countries. The king of communications is told he should meet the philosopher of communication, the controversial Marshall McLuhan.
The dominant medium of communication in any age alters the way people think, feel, act, and react. Television is thus returning the viewers to the picture thinking of primitive men. Of course, I think this is all pie in the sky myself.
Dr. McLuhan arrives.
Some of the critics of McLuhan made fun of McLuhan because they accused him of being a bringer of doom, and they thought they were impervious to doom.
This is the talk of a literate man. The literate man was all for absorbing things. The new sort of electric man doesn't want to absorb things.
You mean that in the future people are not going to be as literate?
Oh, indeed, yes. Literacy is on the skids. Oh, yes.
Now I understand why you got the reputation.
Oh,
I can see that.
No,
you're a shocker, isn't it?
Look,
our own Herbert Marshall McLuhan has been labeled the poet, the philosopher, the prophet. Life magazine called him the oracle of the electric age. His critics are almost as lively as his admirers. They call him a gadfly, a spellbinder, a word merchant. But almost everyone agrees no one can make sense out of more than 10% of what McLuhan has to say. And
what kind of message are you trying to get across?
The kinds that are indicated in what I've already said. Just anything that creates a state of awareness, which makes life a more exciting and wide-awake matter. The term Finnegan's Wake, the title of Joyce's book, is one that fascinates me, and it has much to do with the changes going on in our time. Finn, again, back to the old tribal cycle. It's what is happening in the electric age. We're becoming involved in each other again in that tribal way. Finn, the Finn cycle. Finn again, but this time, wide awake. Finnegan's Wake.
Yet man in society must make some decisions about the rights and wrongs of certain issues. Only in this way can a society function without anarchy. McLuhan,
had achieved anarchy very completely long ago. I didn't realize that it was something that remained to be done. And I think we're going further in every minute. It's like the fish in the water. We don't know who discovered water, but we know it wasn't a fish. A pervasive medium, a pervasive environment,
yes,
is always beyond perception.
Just sit down quietly for a moment, and we're just going to talk about, I know the thing closest to your heart at this very moment is the Memorial Library. And may I just ask some personal questions about, how is Mrs. Kennedy, Mrs. John Kennedy?
She's fine, really, making a adjustment and doing it well. She spends most all of her time with her children now, and I think she's making a good deal of progress.
Is it true that you're over there to see the children a great deal, and Senator Ted is,
yeah,
Ted Kennedy goes there at night and reads them comic books?
No.
Is that comic books?
No. He's goes over and tells stories at night after he finishes work, and tells the two children, and then Dave Powers, who worked for my brother at the White House and was a great friend for many, many years, goes over and at lunchtime and has lunch with John, so they see some men in their lives now.
What do you think, sir, was your brother's greatest contribution?
Well, I think really he made Americans feel young again.
Yes.
And I think that he gave all of us more confidence in the country, more confidence in the struggles that we're involved in internally and externally will be successful, more confidence in our efforts with those who are opposed to us. I think also he gave great confidence in people who lived in other countries, great confidence in the United States and in its leadership, and that we were dedicated to certain principles and ideals, and that we would live up to them and, if necessary, fight for them. And I think it's changed over a period of years that our own feelings, as well as the feelings of other peoples around the world.
Diamonds, we money for Of great, great joy. We got one more for you. Let's see what we can get up here. Might be too much fun. Let's see how we go.
As far as I know, this next medley recorded at the Potter's House in Dallas, Texas, may have been the last video recording Vestal ever did.
And Jesus is the sweetest name I know. Oh, he's just the same. And his lovely
the time of the birth of our first baby, Suzanne, that I remember becoming aware of the Happy Goodman family and especially of Vestal. She sang with them a song called Born to Serve the Lord. I was just back to singing with Bill and his sister Marianne after recovering from childbirth, and the song touched Bill and me, then a young couple, with our first baby. Bill would talk about the first time the nurses brought Suzanne to him all pink and puckered from birth and how he counted all her fingers and toes to make sure she was all there. Such a marvel she was. He said he was afraid she had his nose because it was bruised in delivery. We laughed about that later when she turned out to be so beautiful with tiny features. But Vestal's song kept going through our minds and we began to sing it with our trio. My hands were made to help my neighbor. My eyes were made to read God's word. My feet were made to walk in his footsteps, and my body is the temple of the Lord. Each time we sang it, we dedicated ourselves and our child to the service of God, praying that we would be the kind of parents that would lead her to walk in the footsteps of the Lord. Later, when I came to know and love Vestal, not only as a powerful communicator, but a real woman and a mother, I thanked her for singing this song for two kids scared to death to be entrusted with a real live baby. And thanked her, too, for the many times since we had sat in the front of her bus and prayed together for our kids and grandkids, hers and mine. From the dust of the earth.
Retire or slow down. Don't that sound boring? going to play the piano. Now, darling. Darling, just please play. Don't just goof off, play, darling. Hit as many of them straight on as you can.
Everybody had a great time tonight. We sure did. Thanks for joining us again for a second session of Moi, McLuhan on Ion. Have a lovely, lovely day, and can't wait till we play again soon, if not before. We love you good and can't wait to see you later. Thank you and have a great, great night.